welcome to For the Health of It, starring Dr. Jennifer Kretzinger, wellness chiropractor. She values sleep, usually in bed by 10 and up before 6. Oh, and preferably wearing an eye mask. Our co-host, Jessica Labby, feels she has a minimum 8-hour sleep requirement and likes to rub vitamin E oil on her face before hitting the sack. Mike, our producer, says that he can survive on just a little sleep and frequently goes to bed after midnight. And when his wife wakes him up at the crack of dawn to exercise, he jumps right up. You won't feel sleepy listening to this dynamic team. They will inspire you to eat, move, sleep, think, and live better. You're listening to some raw talk about full potential living for the health of it.
I slept great last night.
Me too. I love sleep.
I got a solid 20 minutes.
Good, Mike.
Yeah. So I feel pretty good
today. Well, unfortunately, that is not good for your cells because our bodies heal when we sleep. And today we are talking about cellular healing. However, I have to start off with letting you guys know you are your cells.
That's deep.
It is deep.
It is so deep because you have 50 trillion plus.
That's a lot.
Single cells, and that's what you are. You are your cells. Okay, think back to maybe junior high when you first start learning about the cells. And do you remember the parts of the cell? Do you guys remember?
The nucleus?
Oh, yep. I was going to say that one. That's the only one I knew, too.
And the nucleus contains the genetic material. And then remember any other part of the cell? The M word?
No.
Mitochondria.
Oh, yeah.
That produces the energy. And then there's a protective membrane at the outside rim, which interestingly, they've discovered that that's more of the brain of the cell. And then there's a cytoplasm, which is basically what fills it all up.
We should have studied for this podcast, Mike.
I know. Yeah. She's taking me back to high school. And
well, it's going to get more complex because a cell is very simple, but it's also a very complex world in there. And scientists don't even fully understand how a cell itself functions. And you probably remember us talking about in the past how cells turn over. So remember we talked about how liver cells regenerate in about 6 weeks, the stomach lining in 3 days, the eye cells in 48 hours. Did you know, Mike, that almost no cells in your body are more than 10 years old?
No, that's a good thing.
That's why you look so good.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. But healthy cells, and here's the trick, healthy cells don't get sick. You first have to get unhealthy. It's unhealthy cells that get sick. So this can be a little bit confusing for people who've always had the mindset that they, say, caught a cold. You know, as if something from outside of them just came over their body and, you know, they were healthy, but there was this cold virus and they caught it. You know, medicine and drugs, I just have to say, are physiologically incompatible to improve cell function. So you think you caught a cold, you take a medicine to make it go away. You can't fix a cell with a drug. You have to be unhealthy. Your cells have to be unhealthy before you get sick. And this makes the way a lot of people think not very effective.
Yeah. Most people don't even think of it that way, I'm sure.
Well, a lot of people will, you know, when cold season comes, they'll stock their medicine cabinet with all kinds of things in case they catch one.
Right.
Whereas other people might just take care of themselves better year round so they don't get one.
And actually what you just said is going to speak directly to the second half of the podcast when we talk about belief.
Ooh.
It's, oh, winter's coming. I'm going to get colds. I have to stock up the cabinet. That is your brain telling your body to prepare to be sick.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's very interesting. A lot of people have the misconception that a cell's life or our bodies are completely controlled by our genes. And that is absolutely false. It's more accurate that we're controlled by our physical environment and our energetic environment. You know, think of it this way. There's a great author. His name's Bruce Lipton. He's got a PhD. And he talks about how genes are like the molecular blueprints that are used in the constructions of the cells and tissues and organs. So think of the blueprints and then the contractor who holds the blueprints. That's the environment. He reads the blueprints and engages them and is ultimately responsible for the character of a cell's life. It's our environment that controls if we're healthy or not and how we express what comes in from our environment.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Here's another analogy. Our genes are like a library. You get your books from your parents. What books you read are up to you. You know, so if the body is always trying to respond to the environment, our cells are controlled by the environment, your body always wants to respond in the most intelligent way it can. So think about this. When we have a symptom, it's our body trying to respond to the environment. So instead of thinking as a symptom as the body failing itself, that fever or say the extra mucus coming out of your nose or the vomiting is your body's perfect attempt to try to heal you from what's happening.
Right, it's fighting back.
Yeah, and health is really just the natural consequence of living, right? It's not random chance. Cell function is health. Disease is lack of cell health. That's why you just can't catch sickness. A flu is you. You know, diabetes is you. It's your cell. It's a cell that's not functioning in a healthy way. They don't just randomly misfunction. But the gene or the genome is the same. There's no studies to show that you're genetically predisposed to get the flu every year or even necessarily to have high cholesterol because your parents did. How we express our genes is determined by our environment. You know, the body is inherently well. You know, like if you cut your finger today, what are the chances that that would heal up?
Pretty good.
Yeah, because your body wants to heal.
Right.
You know, it's always going to strive to heal. And when we give it the best environment to heal, which may be keeping it clean and a Band-Aid, it's going to want to heal. So really the question is, and I know, Jessica, you study this as a lifelong habit, how do cells get unhealthy? You know, that's what we want to figure out, right? Mm-hmm. It's basically a stressor. It's not because of lack of a pill.
Right.
Well, like if you say, you know, my parent has diabetes, my grandparent has diabetes, my great grandparent has diabetes, I'm going to get diabetes. Not so much. If I eat sugar every day and don't take care of myself and don't exercise, yeah, I'm going to get it. But if I make a conscious effort to keep myself healthy, it's not going to happen.
And not allowing stressors to impact your cells. And you guys have probably heard us talk about James Chestnut. He has studied stressors of cells, and he says that it all comes down to toxicity or deficiency. Basically, your cells don't work right because they're toxic. They're basically being poisoned,
right?
What you eat, your environment, or they're lacking something you need. They're deficient. They're deficient in nerve flow. They're deficient in proper nutrients. It can all come down to toxicity or deficiency. Think about this. Sickness is really just the lack of health. Just like darkness is a lack of light. So if we made this room completely dark and we were trying to fix that, we can add stuff to it. We can bring things in the room. We can throw things at it. Unless you turn a light on, you can't get rid of the darkness. Do you get that?
I sure do.
You know, sickness is just lack of the cell being healthy. That's why treating it doesn't necessarily work. It doesn't make the cell healthier. You have to ask the question, what can I do to make my cells healthier? Symptoms don't represent an error in the intelligence of cells. You know, don't look at the cell. You have to look at the environment. The problem with that thought process is you can't sell a lot of drugs based on that.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. You can only sell the drugs based on the belief that your genes are failing you, that your cells are not related to your environment, that they're unhealthy, and you need something outside of you to fix you.
Well, you were talking earlier about having a cold. If you have a cold and your nose is running and you take something and your nose stops running, you're not getting rid of those toxins that your body is trying to excrete.
Right, you're trying to be more comfortable.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah, and you know, not to say that we all have to choose how to make ourselves more comfortable, but if the mindset is, if I can get rid of the symptom, I'm healthy, that's just wrong.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work that way. The whole wellness paradigm, and this is a big switch for some people, it's not about diagnosis. The whole purpose of diagnosis is to be able to treat something. For example, wellness nutrition is not about diagnosing each individual nutrient deficiency or related disease or related condition. It's not trying to treat diseases or conditions with nutrients or herbs or pills or potions. True wellness is just saying, what does my body need to express itself the best way it can?
I like it.
I hope what you can get out of this is we are, you know, not victims of germs and we're not victims of heredity. For example, you know, if a child is completely unruly, increasingly what's happening is the first choice is to medicate these kids to correct their chemical imbalance, you know, rather than fully trying to figure out what does this child need? What does their body need? What nutrients? You know, the poorer the diet, I see it all the time in practice, the more unruly the child. Here's the stats. In fact, only 5% of cancer and cardiovascular patients can attribute their disease to heredity.
Really?
5%.
Interesting.
And you hear that all the time.
And less than 2% of diseases are an actual faulty gene. It does happen, like cystic fibrosis or Huntington's chorea.
Right.
But it's less than 2%. When it comes to chiropractic, what's really exciting is we can actually change the genetic potential with adjustments, because adjustments help bring stress hormone down. I've seen in patients, it's easier for them to make changes in their life because their hormones are more balanced. You know, and really, when you think about it, chiropractors study physiology. You know, a lot of allopathic study is actually pathology. You know, if, for example, if you want to be rich, would you study poor people? Would you study what you don't have?
Yeah.
Right. You don't study human conditions. If you want to be healthy, you study physiology. How does
right.
the body naturally work? What does it need? And our nervous system's job is to monitor our environmental signals. It's to take them in, interpret them, organize how we're going to respond to them. And specifically, our sympathetic nervous system, which is directly related to the upper neck or upper cervical bones, the C1, C2, which is a big focus when we work on someone. So you're actually changing your body's ability to take in signals from the environment and respond to them when you get an upper neck adjustment. And as you guys know, that can be done in a way that's very comfortable. It's not aggressive. There's no twisting and cracking. The upper cervical adjustment can
looks
be
very
done.
Gentle.
It can be very gentle. And it literally releases that power at the brainstem that's trying to get out to the body. What I'd like to do is take a short break, but when we get back, we're going to talk about one way that you can help your body get more balance and help your cells be healthy. We'll start off by talking about acidity and alkalinity and the importance of having an alkaline system. You'll like talking about that.
I love that topic.
Perfect.
You're listening to some raw talk about full potential living for the health of it. Your host is Dr. Jennifer Kretzinger, wellness chiropractor at Spinal Corrective Center in Amherst, New Hampshire. For more information about Dr. Jennifer or this podcast, check out spinalcorrectivecenter.com. If you would like to schedule a health checkup with Dr. Jennifer, call 603-673-5600 and mention this podcast to receive a special offer. That's 603-673-5600. To find a wellness chiropractor in your area, go to chiropractic.org/doctorfinder. Now, back to some raw talk about full potential living for the health of it.
We're back and we are talking about cellular healing. And specifically, I'd like to talk about food nutrients and how to help our body heal as best it can. When we talk about acid and alkaline in foods, basically we're talking about foods that tend to produce more acid in the body versus an alkaline environment. And for example, some of the most acidic foods are artificial sweeteners, like, you know, NutraSweet and Equal, aspartame, Sweet and Low. And one of the most alkaline foods is lemon.
Well, one thing people get confused about with lemon and apple cider vinegar is it is acidic,
right?
But it's
processed in an alkaline way.
Yes,
in the body.
Oh, once it's in your body.
Once it's in the body, it's alkaline. Isn't that interesting? So adding lemon to your water will actually counteract, for example, the acidic effect of coffee.
Yeah, I heard it's very good for you.
Chocolate is very acidic, as is beef, and really anything processed.
I don't eat chocolate or beef.
You haven't had beef in a long time.
Maybe I was 8, and I actually flushed it down the toilet, so no, I didn't eat it then either.
Wow.
When you were 8, you flushed your beef down the toilet?
Yeah. When my parents weren't looking, I would. I guess I never really liked meat.
I guess not.
There's a reason why.
That's really funny. Well, and cheese, pasteurized milk, beer, soft drinks, it's all acidic. So what happens if that's a large portion of your diet or a regular part of your diet, your body can become more acidic. If you have a lot of acid in your body, this is what can happen. Your body can start to take calcium out of the places it should be, like out of the bones. It can take magnesium out of the muscles, so you're more prone to cramps in your muscles, high blood pressure. Acids can start to come through your skin as a way to try to get out. So people who have eczema, acne, if they have headaches, muscle cramps, soreness, swelling, irritation, inflammation, or just a lot of general aches and pains, oftentimes people are too acidic.
Can you be tested for that?
Yeah, you can. It's actually pretty easy. You can, at a health food store, you can get these little strips you put on your tongue and it'll tell you your pH.
Oh, I thought you pee on them.
I think there's both. Yeah. There's both ways to do it.
I haven't done the tongue ones yet.
You know, and dairy and cereal grains are acid producing. And like we said, all the fake sweeteners. So, you know, say you wake up and have your bowl of cereal and your cup of coffee with your NutraSweet in it, you are creating a completely acidic environment. The most alkaline foods would be most of your vegetables, you know, lemon, watermelon, grapefruit, mango, asparagus, all the vegetables, onions, vegetable juices, spinach, olive oil is quite alkaline.
So obviously you want to lean towards the alkaline foods.
Yeah, you know, in general, that's a pretty good idea. It's just to lean towards foods that are whole, foods that that's the way that they were created.
Right.
You know, because we are meant to be slightly alkaline. And acidity, though, think about this, is the effect of toxicity and deficiency in our lifestyle choices. And the other thing that can happen is with this type of diet, there can just be increased inflammation in the body. And when you talk about the standard American diet, like I just mentioned, you know, we can't even argue that there are so many toxins that we can put into our body potentially. And you know what it is our innate intelligence or our body's natural healing intelligence just can't adapt to it. You know, our bodies have not been able to adapt to food coloring and aspartame and even hydrogenated oils. And so we end up with fatigue. We end up with cells that aren't balanced. And ultimately, what medicine labels as a disease. Our bodies basically have no defense for much of the unnatural human-made chemicals that we have in our environment and our food. And the easiest place to eliminate toxins is our food choices. What do you think the first thing I would recommend people remove from their diet, Jessica?
Food in a box.
Food in a box. Particularly sugar. Foods that have that contain sugar. You know, anything processed. If there's more than a few ingredients, it's pretty processed. And that means there's a higher chance there's hydrogenated oils, MSG, aspartame, additives, food coloring, sugar, corn syrup. Basically, if it has a label, it's not whole food. It's going to be harder for our body to digest and likely can affect our cells long term.
I think the most processed food I eat is nut butter.
That's pretty good.
But again, there's only like one or two ingredients in it.
Well, and the best choices to make are live, whole, healthy foods.
Right.
You know, greens, salad, vegetables.
Fruits and veggies.
Fruits, yeah. You know, I'm going to talk about that my entire life as I'm blue in the face because, you know, it's one thing to hear it, you know, and you got to live it. You know, it's just something to keep being reminded of because you go to a grocery store and that's not the only thing you're going to see. You know, you're inundated with commercials on boxes.
I like what you said before. Stick to the perimeter of the store.
That's right.
That's a cool
The closer you go into the bowels of the store, the depths of the store, it's just chemicals.
That's true.
I want to talk now about how our belief system can affect our cells. And there's just something that I find interesting that I want to relay to you. It's in Bruce Lipton's book, Biology of Belief. And he talks about this guy named Dr. Mason, who in the 1950s published something in the British Medical Journal. And what he talked about was he's a hypnotist, and he was an expert at helping people remove their warts.
Nice.
Yeah, he used hypnotism to help people get warts off of their body.
They would just fall off?
They would clear up. The body would
just
clear up. And it worked every time. This guy was famous for removing warts. And one time, this boy, a young boy, had warts all over his body.
Bummer.
And so what he decided to do, the doctor, was he would focus on just one part, just the arm. And he hypnotized the boy and focused on the arm, and the warts went away on that arm. But then the doctor was told afterwards that it wasn't warts. It was a lethal genetic disease called congenital ichthyosis. Now, I said congenital, meaning it's in the genes. There is no treatment. There is no cure. It was absolutely considered impossible to change a genetic disease, especially with the power of the mind. So the fact that he did this was incredible. So he published this. And then, of course, people with this disease flocked to him.
Wow.
But what was interesting was he couldn't cure any of them. And he talked about it was because his subconscious mind now knew it wasn't really warts. So even though he wanted to decide that he could do it, in a sense, he was pretending, because deep in his mind,
he knew he didn't have
the power. Right. Even though he had done it. And the whole idea that we can separate our mind from our physical body is really something that Western medicine has tried to do. I mean, really valiantly, they've tried to do over hundreds of years. And the fact is, we can harness our minds possibly more effectively than a drug can to change our body. You know, I want to make it very clear, it's not just about having these, you know, thoughts that we can just change anything we want by thinking positive thoughts. You know, if it were just that simple every time, people would start to feel like they have failed, because you can't always just say, okay, I'm going to think that I can heal this and my body's going to heal it. But it's important to know that we are capable if we can get past our subconscious mind.
You know who touches on that a lot in his book is Andrew Weil in Spontaneous Healing.
Yes.
He gives a few examples of that.
Well, you know, who else does is Dr. Candace Pert. She is a researcher. She's a biochemist, and she has proven the connection between our thoughts and our emotions, even the words we speak, with our physiology. And she basically says that our feelings can stimulate certain hormones and chemicals in our body that can enhance or suppress our immune system.
No doubt.
Yeah. So, for example, a negative attitude can literally lower your metabolism. You know, that's not surprising that dieting, you know, doesn't work when you're depressed.
Right.
You know?
And it's no surprise, stress is the number one killer. That's what they say.
Yeah, that's right.
I want to give an example of this that I find fascinating. This was published in Pathways Magazine, issue 22. It says, decades ago, during the Vietnam War, ill-prepared for the enormity of the conflict, medics found themselves too often tending to the severely wounded with no morphine. Time after time, they would administer an IV saline solution, the only thing they had, telling the soldiers that it was morphine and that their pain would soon subside. I mean, they didn't have any other choice, right?
Right, right.
But listen, within a short time, the pain was alleviated. I mean, how? Sugar water is hardly an analgesic.
Right.
Did their belief that it was morphine literally trick the body into producing the endorphins necessary to block pain?
Probably.
This is where it gets crazy. It goes on. Lab tests taken on these soldiers who had been given only saline, but who had been told it was morphine, revealed morphine in the blood.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah, where did it come from? The body was listening. Indeed, the body created it.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, in my opinion, the placebo effect should be the source of major funded research.
Yes.
You know, instead, I think doctors especially think, oh, with the placebo, that shows that, you know, we're really weak and there's no money in that. And, you know,
that's true.
The placebo effect is powerful. In fact, this is crazy. Drug companies are studying patients who respond well to sugar pills with the goal of eliminating them from early clinical trials.
Oh, really?
Right. Follow the money. Follow the money.
That's right.
Here's another example of the placebo. There was a knee surgeon, Dr. Bruce Mosley, in 2002, and he didn't believe that placebo had any effect in surgery, but he also knew that he had a really good outcome with patients with knee surgery. So he wanted to do a study to determine what part of his surgery was giving patients most of the relief. But now, any good study, you have to have placebo as one of the things that you're studying.
Right.
So what he did was, the first group, he shaved the damaged cartilage of the knee. The second group, he flushed out the knee joint and he removed material that he thought was causing inflammation.
I would hate to be one of these people that volunteered.
I know.
Well, and then the third group, they would be sedated and they were given 3 incisions, and then he would go on and pretend to do surgery. You know, he'd even make them hear the water rushing like he was flushing it, and he would talk as if he was doing surgery, but he would just stand there and do absolutely nothing, and then he would sew up the incision. So what happened was, the placebo group responded just as well as the
weird.
Other two. Huh. Yeah. I mean, there were people with literally 30 years of knee pain that had been using a cane who now could go out and golf and play basketball and lead healthy lives. It's absolutely crazy. If you study this, placebo works amazing with depression. I mean, they'll give a severely depressed patient a pill, a placebo pill, and not only will the patient believe that their depression is gone, their brain scans will improve.
That's fascinating.
You know, it can work the opposite way too. Wayne Dyer talks in one of his audiobooks about a man who accidentally locked himself in a freezer, and he literally froze to death Well, when the people finally found him, they saw that it wasn't even plugged in.
The freezer wasn't even on?
Wow.
Wow.
So he managed to kill himself with his thoughts.
They call that also the nocebo. So a doctor saying you have 6 months to live, it works just as powerfully. It's just more of a negative.
Right.
In these trials, people can even be told that they're given a drug and that a side effect, for example, is nausea. They're given a placebo and they still get the side effects. That's how powerful it is.
Oh, wow.
No, Henry Ford said, if you believe you can or if you believe you can't, you're right.
Yep.
Mind over matter.
So bottom line is your body is listening. What is your belief about your health? You know, what is your belief about your body's ability to lose weight? What's your belief about your immune system, your sleep patterns? You can give your body the permission to heal. And there's something called remembered wellness. Dr. Herbert Benson, a researcher at Harvard University Medical, said that when we visualize or think about our bodies functioning healthfully, or like remembering a time when we felt our bodies were the strongest and healthiest, certain hormones and chemicals are literally secreted to replicate that good health, and then it enhances the immune system. So we'll finish with one easy tool that my husband used this once to help heal a knee injury. He's using it now to help heal a hand injury. You can actually take the time to help your subconscious be retrained to believe that your body can heal. So for example, if you have an area of your body that you want to focus on healing, you can lie quietly and literally in your mind's eye see those cells repairing.
I'm going to grow a full head of hair now. I'm just going to think about it.
We'll have to do a video podcast to show that one,
Mike. Yeah, it would have to be time-lapsed, of course.
And now you can imagine the cells like Pac-Man. You can imagine, say it's cancer, that there's cells that are going in and gobbling it up.
Right.
You can imagine the cells look sick, turning into healthy cells. You can visualize groups of cells replacing entire areas of the body. You can see your body literally filling with energy. You can even imagine that coming from a deity that you study or follow, or you can imagine your body just emitting white light. Whatever you do, you can see yourself start to heal. And the more that you can train your body to do that and believe it in your subconscious mind, the body has the power to heal.
It's the same as getting hypnotized, only you're doing it yourself.
True.
I want to end with a quote from this Dr. Herbert Benson at Harvard. He said, "We know that belief can lead to healing or at least improvement in 50% to 90% of diseases, including asthma, angina pectoris, and skin rashes, many forms of pain, rheumatoid arthritis, congestive heart failure. They're all influenced by belief. We in medicine have made fun of belief by calling it the placebo effect or insisting that it's all in your head. Yet, belief is one of the most powerful healing tools we have in our therapeutic arsenal."
Mm-hmm.
I believe it. Be well, everybody.
You've been listening to some raw talk about full potential living for the health of it. For more information, go to spinalcorrectivecenter.com or call Dr. Jennifer at 603-673-5600. That's spinalcorrectivecenter.com or call 603-673-5600.